You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show with your host, Brian Callen.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Brian Callen Show. This is Brian Callen. Hunter Motz is not in-house. He's probably off reading or doing something for his brain. And before I start, I'm going to be at the... I'll be in New York at the Gotham Comedy Club February 20th, 21st, 22nd, maybe even the 23rd. I'm not sure. Doing stand-up. And then I'll be in San Francisco on the 27th, 28th and of February and the 1st of March. I can't wait at the Punchline. And my guest, and I'm not going to give his name, and I'll tell you why, but let's just call him DeMonico, because DeMonico is, you know, it's a good name. But Mr. DeMonico was at my show in Austin. I know him through a buddy of mine who happens to have been a Delta Force guy who was actually on my show. His name is Tom Bigley. And Mr. DeMonico, I think you laughed a lot, didn't you? That was pretty funny.
Absolutely. I really needed it, too. It was a great show.
Good, brother. I'm glad. Well, thanks for being here, man. I started talking to DeMonico, and one of the things that I found out by accident about this gentleman is that he was in a group called SEAL Team 6 for, about 10 years. And you're not somebody who really – you guys never really want to talk about it, and I know you never advertise that, and I know that I found that out by accident. And, of course, I came at you with about 1,000 questions, and we've had some good conversations, and so I had to get you on the podcast. And obviously, there are stories that you could never tell on the air, but, you know, you've lived a pretty extreme life, and now you're in civilian life, and DeMonico started a company called Pipe Hitters Union, and you guys should go to the website pipehittersunion.com. You sell some pretty cool clothing here that I'm going to start giving out to my to all my guests on my podcast, because we have a lot of academics, and it's great because this stuff is like you've got a Navy SEAL, like an ex-Navy SEAL who's your model. He models the T-shirts. It's great. I thought we'd talk about just kind of like you were in. I mean, how long were you basically boots on the ground in Iraq and Afghanistan?
All right, well, let me clarify a little bit. I did 10 years active duty. Only a portion of that was at SEAL Team 6.
Okay.
And then I've done another 10 years contracting after that. So I guess I've kind of been playing the game for about 20 years now.
20.
But boots on ground, I've got more than 5 years boots on ground just in Iraq and Afghanistan.
That's an eternity. That's an eternity to be in a war zone, isn't it?
You know, at this point, it kind of just seems like it just seems normal.
Yeah. And what were you before you got into DevGru? You guys call it DevGru, right? I mean, it's Naval
right.
Special.
Yeah. I mean, it's got quite a few different names, and, you know, most of them I won't throw out. If you don't know already, then you don't need to know. But it's, yeah.
Yeah. But were you in SEAL Team, in the regular SEALs before you were invited into SEAL Team 6?
No, okay. I wasn't. Actually, I specialized in intelligence operations and played that game for many, many years, and then was recruited and went over to Damneck and played that game.
Right. You know, it's interesting. We were going to talk about this, and we've touched on this when we talked, but, you know, I'm fascinated with sort of the masculine expression. I'm fascinated with this problem we call masculinity. You know, we live in a time when a lot of those skill sets that you got to the top of your game at are not relevant unless you're in a war zone. And, you know, if you look at how we've evolved as human beings, I mean, you know, for so much of our history, we had to hunt and fight. And that hunting and fighting was up close and personal. I mean, think about killing a deer with a spear. I mean, I've hunted deer, but that's with a high powered rifle. But I mean, to actually have to stab a deer or with a bow and arrow, you're smelling that animal, you're close. Male aggression was a fact of life and probably it's a skill set, which is a killing skill set, whether it's an animal or person, was necessary for our survival for almost for the vast bulk of our history. And now, very recently, with the advent of technology, that isn't the case anymore. And when we do have to use violence, there are a small group of people that we call on, soldiers. And the elite of those soldiers, the tip of the spear, so to speak, are guys like you. What do you think it was about your past and who you are that drew you to be sort of to this kind of thing, to this sort of, I don't know, this activity, man, that got
you there? This community is such a small group in the first place. I mean, you look at how many people are in the military. Such a small percentage of the U.S. population is even in the military. Then you talk about spec ops guys, and the percentage goes even smaller. Then you talk about tier one guys, and this, you know, the percentage gets even smaller. But you can back up a few steps, and really, I think it just starts coming down to, you know, that type A personality, that will to succeed, the drive that someone has, just kind of what sets them apart mentally. Like, you know, there's a lot of tough guys out there, but really it's what, you know, you've got between your ears that I think kind of sets you apart from most other people.
Well, no doubt. And one of the things I thought was interesting is I when I asked you, like, I was so funny. The first thing I said to him is, I go, well, how do you deal with the cold? And DeMarco goes, you don't deal. It's terrible. It's awful. Anybody tells you the use of the cold is lying. It sucks. It's the worst. And I got such a kick out of that. And then I asked you, I got deeper into it, and I said, well, what do you think? How do you deal with the hardship, and how do you deal with what you have to go through when you're—
You just turn it off.
You just turn it off. That's
just
my—
turn it off.
It's my new favorite expression, by the way.
Oh, I mean, I mean, honestly, I don't know anybody. I mean, if I've ever got to be wet and cold again, it's going to be too soon. Like, there is no pleasure in it. It's absolutely miserable. And anybody tells you that they've gotten used to it, honestly, I think they're lying. At this point, it's just, you accept it and you just turn it off and you just deal with it.
And is something like that, have you always been able to do that, or did you have to learn how to turn it off?
No, I really think that might be something that kind of just sets, you know, sets you apart from the rest of the guys as well. I mean, that's just even down to the guys in the normal military. I mean, really, it's, you know, there's a phrase now, they just say embrace the suck. And really, it just deal with it. Just suck it up and deal with it. But, you know, guys that do a better job at dealing with it are probably going to do better.
And that means, and dealing with it, and what they call mental toughness, because we never define this stuff, but a lot of it is just learning what not to tell yourself, what not to think about, right? I mean, a lot, when I would ask you questions when we were off the air, a lot of times you were like, dude, I never really thought of it that way. I don't even think about it. So a lot of it is, wouldn't you say that a lot of it is just not thinking?
Well, sure. I think anybody that, you know, if you've got a will to succeed and you're looking to, you know, press forward and advance, you're always looking at the finish line. You're not looking at, you know, every pothole that you may trip and fall in. And especially you're not looking, you know, behind you at, you know, anywhere you've made a mistake or, you know, you've messed something up. You're always looking at that finish line. So if you're always looking at that finish line, you've got no time to think about everything else. So it's really just, you know, mission first, mission first, mission first. Everything else is secondary.
But see, every time I talk to really successful people, I find that to be the case. You know, but we live in a society where you're supposed to get in touch, quote unquote, with your feelings. You're supposed to talk to somebody, a therapist, a professional. You're supposed to kind of like somehow sit down and talk out your pain. And somehow there's this idea that you're going to overcome it. And I've always felt and that so much of that philosophy is kind of dwelling on the problem and not focusing on the solution.
Well, personally, I think it's crap, if you don't mind me saying so.
I love it.
And it's interesting for me to say that. My undergrad degree is in psychology, and then I've got a graduate degree in business.
I didn't know that, dude. That's impressive.
Well, when I got my undergrad degree in psychology, I was that guy in the class that everybody looked at and thought that I was absolutely nuts because, you know, I thought completely differently than most of the people in there. And unfortunately, I think so many people that are looking for a degree in psychology just want cheap therapy for themselves anyway. But, you know, like really, I just think it comes to being just mentally tough. Like, yeah, if you got a problem, I mean, yeah, some people may need some guidance and they may need to talk it out with somebody. Mm-hmm. But half the time, when you're doing counseling, you're really just listening and asking the right questions to get somebody to work through their own problem. Mm-hmm. So really, I think if you're, you know, tough enough, or if you've got, you know, mentally what it takes, and you're just logical enough that you can work through your own problems. I, you know, and half the time, I just don't even bother thinking about it. You know, people mess up, you make mistakes, you learn a lesson, just move on. Don't forget it, but don't dwell on it. Just move the hell on.
Mm. Mm. And what about asking yourself the right questions? Do you find yourself, when you get into a negative state of mind, do you find yourself kind of, how do you refocus your eye?
Really, it just comes back to asking myself, why am I here? You know, what was the, you know, what was I attempting to accomplish in the first place? So really, I refocus back on the objective and forget about the mistake. Just move on.
Mm. I know you've been through, and you know, you won't talk about this, but I know you've been through your share of very hairy situations. I know you've been shot 3 times. I know you've been, you know, in you've even been in a helicopter crash and stuff, and I'm sure other things. And we were talking about courage and how you define courage. And one of the things I love that you said is that you said you're always, anybody who says that they're not afraid, you're always afraid. Anybody who says otherwise is either stupid or they don't know, or they're lying. And I'm always fascinated with guys like yourself who've been in these extreme circumstances and have proven themselves time and again in these very, very, very difficult and extreme circumstances. I mean, anytime, you know, you say SEAL Team 6 or one of you guys says that, every single guy in the room stops and listens. And the reason we stop and listen is because so much of that title, that badge, whatever you want to call it, comes with it a massive amount of, you know, there's a lot of baggage with it, which is really, we all go, oh man, that guy's a badass, or that guy's really brave, or that guy's like a hero, or that guy's not afraid of anything, or that guy, and there's all these things. But to hear when I talk to guys like yourself or like Tom, you speak about things in very different ways. I mean, it's not, you never call yourselves brave. And you never even talk about courage, it seems. What you talk about, what it sounds to me like you talk about, is learning how to control the fear and moving forward within the fear. And whether that's by turning it off or telling yourself you're already dead, whatever it might be, I know that you guys have your own language for yourself. Maybe you talk a little bit about that.
Well, I can't say that, you know, I've not been afraid. I mean, I won't say that I'm always afraid either, but you know, the situation will dictate. But yeah, there's definitely been many times that where I've been afraid. And I think people that say that they don't get afraid, I mean, I just don't believe it. But really, anybody that's, you know, being honest with you or with themselves is, I think, is going to tell you that, yeah, fear is real. But it's how you move through it. And I think experience makes, you know, a huge difference. You know, the first time I, you know, was in a firefight, I was extremely afraid. But, you know, the more and more times you've been in that situation, you know, I won't say, the easier it just becomes. So really, you can just admit that you're afraid and just, you know, press on. But, you know, it's the guys that, you know, will really perform in the face of danger. I mean, that's really what it's about, just, you know, pushing through it.
Does the fear, though, in a way, like, does the adrenaline, do you think you produce less adrenaline as you get more experienced? Does the fear in some ways, I mean, if you were to define fear physically, so if your heart's beating faster and you're producing more adrenaline and all that, and you're breathing rapidly, I would imagine you start to learn how to kind of calm all of that stuff down and stay on point, stay on mission, and be just, it's kind of like a boxer. When a boxer gets hurt, they'll train you to do it. You can't do it wrong because you're training. You're so trained that even when you get hurt, your hands are still up, you're still moving, you're still bobbing, you're still weaving. I mean, do you feel that way?
Well, I don't know if it's so much as you train to, you know, just, you know, deal with it better. Mm. I think, honestly, just over time, it's physiologically and psychologically, you just start adapting. So really, like, you know, say an alcoholic, you know, he needs more and more and more alcohol to get that same buzz. You know, if he has one beer a day, at some point that beer is going to do nothing for him.
Right.
Well, it's really, I think, kind of the same thing. You know, in the, you know, your very first firefight, you know, your heart's beating, you know, ready to come out of your chest. And then over time and experience, it's just, you know, it's just another day in the office. Now, that's, you know, I'm exaggerating a bit by saying that, but it's, you know, it's not, your heart is no longer ready to come out of your chest. It's, you know, it's definitely a more manageable situation.
Do you think, and do you feel that you kind of, now that you're back in civilian life and, you know, you've seen a lot of things and you've seen, unfortunately, a lot of tragedy as well, and friends and people close to you die and stuff. Do you think that you look at life with more zest and more gusto? Do you think that you are, you know, look, I mean, you know, it's very, very difficult for most of us to understand what it's like to live on the razor's edge that way, to really live life and death. But do you think it's done something to you to, I mean, do you feel more happier to be alive, or are you, what do you think it's done to you, if
anything?
Well,
I'll tell you this, and this is, it's going to be very easy to judge me making this statement, but I've come to a place where I really, really value human life. But I've also come to a place where I find no value in human life. Like, I'll look at good people and I see, you know, good people die every day, and it's tragic to me. It's absolutely horrible. But then I look around and I see so many people that I'm like, yeah, that dude just needs to be dead. And I know that sounds so bad.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. It sounds honest.
You know,
it sounds honest.
So much time in various war zones, and I just see good people die every day, you know, whether it's some, you know, clown in a, you know, in a suicide, you know, vest that goes hot, or, you know, whatever. But good people die every single day. And for what? You know, I mean, for no reason at all. But then you've got, you know, a child molester or a serial killer that, you know, that are alive on death row. And I'm like, really, for what?
Right.
You know, it just makes no sense to me.
Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more, my friend. That's exactly how I feel. You know, I think that's kind of like I have to tell you that one of the main things that I found that I wanted a podcast with you about, and what I found so interesting, was that, you know, and you've told me, I know things about you from other people. You're the real deal. You've been in real situations that most of us have never even come close to. Yet so much of what it feels drives you is that you are a truly, like, a loving, good person. And one of the examples that I'll give, and you wouldn't say about it, but when you lost your best friend in 07, he had a daughter. For whatever reason, a lot of reasons, his insurance policy was spent for reasons, and we won't go into. But you set up a fundraiser for that child, and one of the things you did was tread water for 24 hours, and you raised $30,000. I can't imagine treading water for 24 hours. It's ridiculous. It's the craziest thing in the world. But that's the kind of guy you are. And when I heard you the first time, you said, we were talking about what the mission takes sometimes, and it can be pretty hairy. And you know, let's be honest, you guys at the top tier one, you guys are at sometimes in the business of taking targets out. But you said basically that you love your guys and you'll do anything for your team. That was your credo. That was your philosophy. So here's this badass dude, blah, 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 who is driven, it feels like driven a great deal by your love for the people around you. That's what,
you know,
yeah.
You know, people think that, you know, you've gone to war and you're just this hardened guy and you're completely, you know, desensitized to everything. And, you know, I don't think that's really the case at all. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's definitely quite a bit that I'm desensitized to now, but just like I said, like, I really value certain human life, and that's how I feel about my family. It's how I feel about the guys that, you know, I've, you know, worked with. You know, they are my family, but in a different sense. And there's nothing that, you know, I mean, obviously there's nothing that you wouldn't do for your wife or children, and there's nothing that I wouldn't do for my family. The family is just a little different. It's just a different, you know, scenario. But when I lost my best friend, I couldn't stand to see his daughter, you know, left in that situation. I just decided to take it, you know, upon myself to see that she was, you know, squared away. And, you know, I set up a trust fund for her, and once a year I do, you know, something to raise money for her. And, you know, that year I tread water at the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad in their pool for 24 hours without stopping. And nobody could believe it. Nobody really thought that, you know, some guy was, you know, going to do it. And, you know, I kind of used that to my advantage and really started challenging people and saying, all right, well, I'm going to, you know, basically you can pledge whatever amount per hour. And so everybody was pledging, you know, really heavily, thinking, nah, he's not going to go very well. He's not going to do it. And I was, you know, I told everybody, hey, I'm going 24 hours. And they're just like, nah, it's never going to happen. And, you know, I jumped in the water at 8 a.m. and, you know, I didn't quit treading until 8 a.m. the next day. And everybody, people were coming from embassies all around because they just couldn't believe it. But everybody just kept throwing money in. Yeah, $30,000, you know, and 24 hours later, you know, it worked out.
That's ridiculous. That's the craziest thing I've – that has to be the most physically challenging thing you've ever done. Or am I wrong?
No, you know, really.
No.
It was tough, but it really, like, it was just one of those things that, you know, I'm pretty lean, so I don't float. I've got to move.
By the way, before you tell the story, one of the things that, the reason I even asked you if you were even in the military is I shook your hand because you looked kind of, I mean, you're probably, what do you walk around, 200 pounds?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I shook your hand, though, and I've done enough, you know, sports and stuff, and I went, that guy's hand is ridiculously strong. I was like, that's not normal for a dude to have a hand that strong. And then I finally got the answer that you were, you know, you've done a couple things. You've done a couple physical things. But anyway, so you're really lean. You have to tread water for 24 hours.
You can't stop. Like, if I stop, I sink. You know, a lot of guys, they stop and they can float. Well, I mean, really, it's just... Imagine just walking around a track, you know, a high school, you know, track for 24 hours without stopping. Yeah. Really, that's about as much energy as I had to put forth. Now, you can't stop, but you just keep walking around that track.
That's a lot.
Luckily for me, I'm pretty efficient in the water. But, yeah, some guys, you know, can't go 5 minutes treading water. I'm just lucky to be, you know, really efficient in the water. But I used it to my advantage, and I put, you know, 30 grand, you know, in her trust that year for... Her, you know, scholarship fund.
I would say that treading water is harder than walking. I think. I don't know. You're constantly moving. You know. I don't know. Look, I mean, I'd have to try it. And I won't. All right? I won't. But it just seems like such a badass way to raise money. Like, it's actually, you know, people, I'm running in a marathon, you know, sponsor me. I'm always like, I don't want to sponsor you. That's boring to me. I don't know. You're running a tough mutter. Meh. It always kind of, every time I get like somebody calls me up or an email, hey, sponsor me. I'm doing this. I'm always like, if you told me you were treading water for 24 hours, you got my attention.
Well, I'm working on one. She's in high school now, so I don't have many years left to do it. And I'm really trying hard to pull this last one off, but it's taken a lot of coordination. And I need a lot of help from a lot of people. But what I want to do is beat the Guinness Book of World Records for the furthest distance to scuba dive. And what I'm trying to do is scuba dive from Key West all the way to Miami without coming up.
You're a nut. This is
and
what I love.
I really think it's extremely possible. Like, I'll need to be under for about 20, 22 hours. But it takes a lot of coordination, you know, quite a few tanks.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, I'm going to stay shallow. I'm going to need people to, you know, come down and do tank swaps with me. But there's just a lot of coordination that goes into it. I'm really hoping that I can pull it off because, you know, doing something like that, I think I can get national exposure and really, you know, kind of set her up.
That's incredible. Yeah, that's, I mean, there it is. I mean, doing something for somebody else. I just love that. That's the kind of stuff that I find so fascinating, DeMarco. I just, the fact that you're... You know, you're now a civilian, once again, with pipehittersunion.com. I love these shirts, dude. As we're talking, I'm going through your whole website. I'm loving these shirts. I want shirts. You're a guest on my podcast, which means I get shirts. Let's just establish that. And I want
not
them in
a problem.
I want them in medium. I'm not large like you are. You know, I'm civilian size, if you don't mind. But anyway. And now my engineer is actually coming over and checking on my shirt. I'm a medium. All right. I have a very wide back, though. Very wide back, if I don't say so myself. But this is the dichotomy of a human being. You know, here you are at the top tier, you know, doing 20 years of basically extreme activity because you are a contractor as well.
Yeah, after I got out of the military, I played the contract game for about 10 years, kind of off and on, hopping around from company to company, agency to agency.
Which was more dangerous in some ways, wasn't it?
Yeah, it could definitely, really, it just depends on the way you look at it. You know, you don't have the same type of mission, but you also don't have the same level of support. Like, you don't have, you know, the QRF that's coming for you if something goes wrong. You don't have the same type of, you know, medical facilities. Like, you just, you know, you don't have the ISR assets. You just don't have a lot of the help. You know, you're not calling an inspector if things go wrong, you know. So it's, you know, there's some good and there's some bad, but yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know if this is a story you can tell, but just the idea that when you got shot, you basically fished for about 6 months and caught one fish.
Yeah, I mean, really, it kind of ties into that whole, like, not being afraid thing. Like, when I got shot up, you know, it was quite a bit of a recovery for me, but really a lot of that recovery was in my head. Like, I was definitely gun-shy for quite a while. I sat on the beach, had a condo on the beach, and I'd walk out of my beach every day, and I'd just sit on the beach, and I fished. And I really don't think I was using the right bait or the right pole or anything, to be honest, but it wasn't really about fishing. It was just sitting there and, you know, watching the sun come up and watching the sun go down and just kind of spending some time in my head. And it took about 6 months for me to kind of get my head right. And yeah, in that 6 month period, I caught one fish.
It's so hilarious. I mean, your movement must have been pretty restricted too, right? I mean, I know where you got shot. You got shot through the shoulder.
Yeah.
Yeah. After taking two slugs to your plate, but was the physical rehab extensive?
You know, not it wasn't too bad, really. Mm.
But that's coming
you know,
from
I mean, my body's been through the ringer. You know, I've definitely, you know, I've had my skull fractured before. Like, I've been through the ringer. So it, you know, just sucking up the pain and, you know, pushing through. It's one of those things you always know tomorrow's going to be a little bit better and the next day is going to be a little bit better. So as long as you hang in there, you know, it's your body's going to heal for the most part, you know, and yeah. With the exception of, you know, some really, really severe injuries. But yeah, really, I think, you know, the help that I needed, the healing that I needed just needed to kind of happen in my head.
When you see guys who've been injured gravely, losing legs and stuff like that, whatever it might be, that's got to be very difficult. I remember walking through the hospital in Afghanistan and seeing some of that, and it was difficult for me to keep that keep that sort of, you know, in context, because, you know, so much of your life in mine is physical. I use my, you know, I love how physical I can be. You know, I love that I'm, you know, able to use. I have my hands. I have my feet. I can feel everything. And one of my biggest fears is losing that. And I know that in the military, you have a lot of guys who are, you know, they've reached the apex of that kind of activity. They're young, they're in their prime, and then it's taken away from them in a flash. I don't know. Do you have anything to say to those guys? Do you have anything to, how does one deal with that?
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't know what to say to those guys. You know, other than, you know, man, I feel for you. You know, sometimes, you know, shit just doesn't go your way. But what I really have to say is to those guys that are milking the system, those guys that, you know, are always crying about a problem, or I've got a hangnail, or I've got this or that. I just want to, you know, smack them upside the head and say, look, dude, you know, you could have a legitimate injury. Shut up. Quit complaining. Like, because so many of these guys that are, you know, have lost limbs and, you know, or whatever, you know, missing, you know, a couple legs or missing an arm.
Yeah.
Look at them, dude. They're putting out. Like,
yep.
They're putting out. Like, they're making shit happen.
Yep.
And it just, man, it just makes me boil to see the guys that are, you know, crying about, you know, the small stuff.
You know, my buddy.
Like me, you're never going to hear me complain. You're never going to hear me complain about an injury because I don't feel like I've got the right.
Yeah.
You know, I've been really lucky.
Yeah. That is to me the big lesson of life. You know, look at what you have, not what you don't have. That's really, really important. You know, my buddy is a spinal cord injury doctor, and I said to him, and he deals with children with spinal cord injuries, so they're never going to walk again and things like that. And I walked through that hospital with him, and I said to him, what does this do to you, man? And he goes, look, I just can't stand when people complain. Okay, it drives me crazy. I don't want to hear any complaints because I deal with real issues and real tragedy. So again, it just comes back to perspective, you know. And I always think that, you know, the example of those guys, and you see a lot of these guys who've gone through. Some of these guys come to my show and they don't have legs or they're missing a thing. And I've yet to meet one guy who isn't moving forward with their life. I mean, I've yet to meet, you know, one guy who isn't. And even though he's got no, you know, he's missing a leg or whatever, a lot of these guys are just they're doing other stuff. They're moving forward, and to me that example is very important because it kind of inspires me, man. You know, I always kind of derive strength from that. It kind of puts shit in perspective for me, you know. So
well, that's how I deal with my problems, and I think it's probably one of the best ways to deal for anyone to deal with their problems. You know, don't dwell on the past. You know, don't think about what could have been, should have been. You know, what you did wrong, just move forward, you know, make progress. I mean, if anything, making progress, accomplishing goals, you know, moving forward, that's going to help heal, you know, whatever you got going on and, you know, probably help most people just forget about, you know, the things that you've done wrong. You know, nobody's got it right. Everybody's, you know, messing up somewhere. And, you know, that's just, you know, that personally, that's how I deal with it. You know, I'm always looking, you know, to do something else and grow and, you know, grow as a person and, you know, accomplish something else.
When did you learn that?
You know, I think that's just, you know, who I've always been. You know, I mean,
well, maybe like until you had to be, right? I mean, you kind of,
in school, you know, even in high school, you know, I was always looking to do something different. Half the time it was, you know, skip out and go surfing, but it's just, you know, I didn't feel challenged. I wanted to, you know, go accomplish something else. But in the military, it was always, you know, do something better, do something bigger. And, you know, I did that. And then, you know, I got, you know, my undergrad degree and that wasn't enough. So I got a graduate degree and that wasn't enough. And just, you know, I'm always looking to, you know, push forward no matter what it is. And now the crazy thing is it's very interesting that I've checked all these blocks and a lot of my friends that know me, they're like, you know, where do you go from here? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I don't know where to go from here. And, you know, spending so much time in the military and then, you know, contracting, you know, I feel like there's not a whole lot left to do. I've kind of found my calling in business, and it's, you know, because it's nonstop, it's constantly moving, and it keeps me engaged, and I can constantly focus on, you know, the next project or the next goal. But that's kind of where I found myself.
That's what I was going to ask you, because it's got to be very difficult to go from the extreme and just. I mean, they say war is a drug, and I don't know how you feel about that. But, you know, the getting addicted to the adrenaline, getting addicted to the danger, getting addicted to the extreme lifestyle. And by the way, maybe even getting addicted to the bonds that you make with the guys next to you. That's where real friendships are formed, I think they say, in extreme circumstances. How do you substitute? How do you adjust?
You know, I think war could be a drug, but in a very different sense than I think you probably intended. Like, you know, yeah, there was definitely a high in the beginning. You know, there was adrenaline, there was fear. There's a little bit of all of that. But really after a while, then it, you know, speaking for myself, like I had become desensitized. So then it was just like, you know, now what? Am I basically just walking around like a zombie, you know, on narcotics? Like, you know, not literally, but yeah. I mean, like now I'm kind of just zoned out. Like it's, you know, I'm kind of desensitized to it. So that constantly evolves. But now, you know, who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just interesting because seeing you, I made you send me a picture of what you looked like with that ridiculous beard, that long hair. And now you're like, you know, basically a civilian.
Yeah, my wife hates that photo. Like, it creeps her out. Like, she doesn't ever.
Why?
Like
because you have
it.
Red contacts in?
Yeah.
That's hilarious to me. You would wear the red contacts from time to time, right?
Yeah, I mean, only when they would benefit the situation. I don't want to get into that.
Oh, we won't. We won't. The story is, you know, I would drag stories out of DeMonico, and he's you guys are always reluctant to talk about stuff. And I love when guys like you, I always make this joke about, you know, just being, every story you tell is basically vague. Well, that's classified, but I will tell you, I wish I had one story like that, dude. But so does every man. That's, you know, everybody you meet in L.A., by the way, was in SEAL Team 6. It's really interesting.
Oh, that's how it goes, huh?
Oh, yeah. Everybody's a black belt. They were in SEAL Team 6. I mean, this place is just full of lies. And I happen to be one of those guys. No, I just say I'm friends with guys like you. But it should be noted that there's a chance we may go hog hunting. Am I right?
Oh, no, it's happening.
Thank you.
No, it's definitely happening. I'm working on it now. I've got a few things left to coordinate, but yeah, I'm lining up two helos. We're going to have a little bird, and we're going to have an R-22. And the R-22 is pretty much just going to be used for video, and then we're going to set guys up in this little bird, and we're just going to, you know, tear it up. I'm working on getting a couple belt-fed guns as well, so you know we can really, really tear some stuff up hanging out of the side.
And before you people judge me, let me just say a couple things. First of all, I hunt. I'm bringing Joe Rogan with me, and my favorite meat is bacon. My favorite meat is pig. I will eat that whole damn hog. And correct me if I'm wrong, but in Texas, wild boar, wild hog are a major, major environmental nuisance.
No, they're extremely bad here. They're called feral hogs, and they're just wild. And they, hogs, when they have a litter, I mean, they have so many little pigs. And just to keep up with their, you know, their population growth, they do hunting. And it's year-round. You don't need a permit to do it. You just kill hogs because they are tearing up so many farmers' land. Like, they're having a huge impact, negative impact on the farming here. So it's, you know, year round, just tear them up.
Well, that's when me and my buddy, me and my ex SEAL friend, get up in a bird and we do some shooting.
Well, I'm going to try to get Tom down for it. And, you know, in the company, we've got, you know, two SEALs. We've got, you know, Tom, Delta. We've got a handful of guys. You know, Force Recon Marine. So we got a handful of guys. I'm going to try to bring everybody out for it. But
so I'm basically going to be, I'm going to be your concubine. I'm going to be the girl you guys pass back and forth. Should I just wear a dress around all that testosterone? Hey guys, it's me. I'll be cooking. do I have kitchen detail, or am I going to be wearing an apron, or do I get to actually shoot here?
No, we're going to set you up, dude. We're definitely going to set you up and let you tear it up.
All right, man, because I can drop a deer at 150 yards, dude. Don't be too impressed. Don't be too impressed. By the way, what's the difference between Delta and SEAL Team 6?
Well, there's a big difference, but I'm not going to go into that either.
you can't go into it because it's politically incorrect, or you're not going to go into it because it's classified?
Well, I mean, there's extreme similarities, but there's also a pretty big difference. But yeah, I would just say, hey, why don't you know? I mean, Google knows everything. I don't know how that guy got so smart, but that guy, Google, he knows everything. So really, if you really want to know something, you can always check with that guy.
That's what it is. Just go to Google, and they'll tell you the exact difference.
Well, and you know what? He's probably, you know, he messes stuff up all the time. You know, he's got details wrong here, and he's got details wrong there. But for the most part, that Google guy knows a lot.
What a surprise. What a surprise. Well, listen, man. DeMarco, I appreciate you doing the Brian Callen Show. And I'm glad we got to touch on things that, you know, I wanted to talk about somebody, you know, people always want to hear about missions and all that stuff. And I'm really more interested in the man that used to be and the man that is, based on his experiences. You know, I think we all go through things. And I think as you get older, you and I'm older than you, but you're getting up there. And you know, you look at life differently and you start to look at, you know, how to make the world a better place. You know, I think in the beginning, as a kid, as a young man, you got a lot more warrior energy, and that warrior energy then, you know, loses its relevance maybe in your everyday life, and you have to start doing other things, and that's, you have responsibility to a family, friends, and things like that, and I'm sure that's more where your head is. You've gone from warrior to provider, warrior to jokester, warrior to lover, all those things. Would you say that's accurate?
No, I would absolutely say that that's pretty accurate. Like, I look at, you know, my environment has changed, but the perception hasn't. So I'm still looking at things with a very different mindset than most people, although my environment has, you know, changed considerably.
But you still look at things, you think differently because your environment, because of what the environment you came from, in other words.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you think it's made you, ironically, more generous?
You know, it depends. I'm not racist by any means, but I'm very, very prejudiced. And it has nothing to do with color, but it has to do with, you know, just, you know, personality traits, really. Mm. You know, if you're a dirtbag, you're a dirtbag. I don't care what color you are. But if you are a good person, mm-hmm. you know, you're a good person. And if you're a dirtbag, man, yeah, I'm going to judge the hell out of you. And I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to do anything for you. But if you're a good person, you know, it really doesn't matter where you came from or what you look like. Yeah, I'll do anything for you.
That
I think a lot of that has, you know, been a direct result of my experiences.
Well, you know what that feels like? It feels like you don't have time to bullshit. It feels like you've been through, you've done your time, and here you are alive when a lot of guys are not. And it feels like, you know, one of the things I gather when I talk to you is that you're just very direct and very honest. I never hear any bullshit or really any sugarcoating because you speak the way most people feel, I think.
Yeah. I mean, really, what's the point?
Yeah.
You know, what's the point of sugarcoating it? Now, obviously, I'll, you know, curb my tongue and, you know, around certain people or in certain situations just because I know a lot of people just, you know, can't handle the, you know, what I really want to say. But, you know, half the time, you know, it's really interesting. My wife tells me all the time, if she brings me around, you know, her friends or whatever, she's like, look, just, you know, put the filter on, leave it on for a little bit, let my friends get to know you.
Yes, yes.
Before you say what's really on your mind.
Right, right. Well, you're a libertarian, so you and I see eye to eye politically, brother. So
absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Live and let live. You believe in maximum personal liberty until,
absolutely.
Yeah, until you're stepping on somebody else's rights. Do you have any, what impresses you at this stage of your life?
I don't know. Mm. That's a good question. I don't know how to answer that.
Yeah, good. I'm glad I stumped you. It's my job.
Yeah, you stumped me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what to say.
Because, I think about it all the time. I mean, that guys like you who've been through it impress me. That's impressive to me. Yet as I get older, I'm also very impressed with being creative. People who can really create something out of nothing. That's really difficult. That's something that I think we all stay alive for. You know,
it's funny you say that is, you know, and I didn't really think about it, but and I'm very, very impressed with the arts. You know, people that can, you know, play an instrument or, you know, people that can sing. I'm in awe by that, but, you know, I could never do that. It's just, you know, I think I'm just cut from a different cloth, but I can really appreciate people that can.
You're the warrior that protects us. So you see, I've always given a lot of time and a lot of admiration to veterans and things because I believe that every society needs warriors because warriors are the ones that keep the barbarians at the gate so that us artists can just make beauty. If you didn't have warriors protecting those walls, we would be subjects and slaves. And I really wish
that was the case. And I used to really believe that, you know, that was the case. And now, you know, when I hear people say, you know, I'm fighting for your freedom or this or that. I'm like, really? Are we? Are we? I don't know. I don't know if we really are. Are we really fighting for our freedom? Or are we over there just, you know, messing up somebody else's life? It's tough for me to say that. And a lot of people will judge me for that. But in the beginning of the war, I mean, it's been a long time. We've been at war for a long, long time. I really believed in what we were doing. And now, you know, I step back and, you know, I'm not so sure. Well, actually, I shouldn't even say I'm not so sure. I'm definitely sure that, you know, I'm not.
I think that's
going on now. You know, over years of mission creep and things have changed. And now we're not the warrior that's over there, you know, getting to take care of business. You know, the guys are walking around with one hand tied behind their back and they're not allowed to do the job they were sent over there to do. I'm very conflicted about that.
Well, you know, I'm so glad that you got to that because I think that's a very profound statement. And I think it's very interesting that what I was talking about was something idealistic, and you've been there and seen and been involved in the ugly details, and you saw the war and you saw the effort morph and change from original mission to what it is now. It goes back to exactly why anytime the federal government gets involved in something and grows too big, or anytime there's profit in war, or anytime there's profit in anything from a central bureaucracy with no accountability, it is going to spin out of control. These things snowball before, and nobody really has any accountability or any idea of where things are going. It just gets out of control.
And the money we spend is insane. You know, we're sitting on $17 trillion in debt, and we're spending money like it's nobody's business. And for what? Like, we just lost Ramadi and Fallujah in Iraq. Well, I shouldn't say we lost. It wasn't ours to lose. But, you know, we handed it over as secure cities to the Iraqi government. Now they're controlled by Al-Qaeda again. How many guys did we lose taking those two cities? And now for what? For what? It pains me.
And Afghanistan, you could say in some ways the same thing.
Well, Afghanistan is even worse to me because the guys have got their hands tied behind their back. And, you know, in certain cases, they're not even, you know, rolling around with rounds in their chamber, or even magazines in their magwell. Like, these guys are, you know, they're really, really hamstrung, and they're getting, you know, killed by the guys who are over there to help. It's just, the situation over there is deteriorating, you know, to a ridiculous extent. It just, it blows my mind. Like, war is ugly. It's supposed to be ugly. You know, send these guys over there, let them, you know, do business. Let them take care of, you know, take care of what needs to be taken care of, however it needs to be taken care of, and then let them come home. But just sitting us over there and just occupying and not allowing the guys to do the job. And,
well,
the mission is creeped now. It's no longer even, you know, hunting people down. You know, we're winning hearts and minds and building roads and schools. And, you know, that's not what war's about in my mind.
Well, it sounds to me like, and I've felt this for a long time, we lost the clarity of the mission a long time ago.
I asked
plenty of people, what are we doing there? I mean, if you ask even the president, it's a very difficult question to answer after a while. And that's what I mean by something spiraling out of control. And it's at a point where nobody else can control it, where it becomes, you know, pulling out becomes its own political liability, and it comes with so much baggage. Here we are. And the only thing, in my opinion, you can do is to learn from this. I don't think we will, but learn from this. And more importantly, readjust our incentive structure. There are a lot of people that make money off of war. I'm not a conspiracy theorist or anything like that, but I do think that whenever you have an incentive structure in place that rewards this kind of mission creep or whatever it might be, it's going to happen again. And the real debate and the real question is how to deal with that. I'm not a political scientist, and it's not my job, but I think it's something to talk about. And I think you've touched on it. I mean, I'm way more apt to listen to a guy like you who's really been there and really smelled it and really paid a price for it.
I just want somebody to be honest with me. I don't really care. Like, and I know this is going to sound a little bit bad, but, you know, if we're fighting for, you know, somebody's freedom, roger that. Just tell me that's what's happening, and we're going to go make it happen. You know, we're going to do work. But if, you know, if it's about oil, just say, hey, guys, we need some oil. And then, you know what? Guys are going to roger up, and we're going to go make it happen. But the lies that, you know, they're just ridiculous, the lies that are told and perpetuated, and really, you don't need to sell me. You don't need to convince me it's about freedom. Just tell me, you know, just be honest with me and tell me it needs to happen, and then we'll go make it happen.
Right, right. I appreciate that honesty, man. I think it's very illuminating, I'm glad you reminded me of that fact, because it's very easy to be idealistic, and it's very easy to throw out. One of the things I love about having a podcast and getting to talk to guys like you is that you come to the table, and I come to the table like anybody else, with a certain set of assumptions. And then you talk to somebody who's really been there, and it could be anywhere, but I'm just depending. In this case, this is war, and it gives us a very different perspective. You know, your perspective is very valuable. Because it's something that most of us read about, but we don't experience. And so to hear it from the horse's mouth is, and you're not alone, by the way. You're not alone in your assessment. You're certainly not alone in that point of view. I've talked to a number of soldiers, elite soldiers and regular soldiers who feel the exact same way. So I'm more apt to listen to that, and I'm certainly more apt to listen to the next time we have a bunch of civilians who want to get us into a war. We better be careful, because I remember the majority of people that were in the military at the time of this, certainly the Iraq effort, the military, a lot of the military guys were saying bad idea, but civilians were the ones that got it through. So just food for thought and important to remember from our lessons. I think that's the point of history. That's why I have a lot of historians on this show. It gives us perspective, and hopefully, the more you learn about history, the less apt you are to repeat it. Not to be cliche, but I think there's a lot of truth to that. So there it is. I hope you learned a lot here, DeMarco. I appreciate your conversation, bro, and I appreciate you doing the show. And I know you didn't want to touch on things, and I know you're not a guy who brags, but I'm kind of proud to know you, and I appreciate it. And I know I'm going to be pushing your shirts, and I know I'm going to be wearing your shirts.
Well, absolutely. What I want to do is get you, we're going to send you out, you know, quite a few cases, maybe, you know, as much as we can. And,
good.
You know,
good.
You know, just give them out to your guys.
Well, here's what we're going to do. If you guys want, these are, you can just go to the website, Pipe Hitters Union. It's actually really cool stuff. It's very macho, but it's exactly the stuff that I'm going to wear when I work out. And it's just cool stuff. And it's kind of understated. I like a lot of the designs. And then when I have call-in guests, we're going to have you send them a shirt directly. And I think you guys are designing something for the actual show.
We are. So, we're designing something special for you right now.
I like it.
And we don't have it on our website right now, but we've got a women's line that we're releasing in this spring.
Oh, nice.
So, and all the women's stuff, our guys' stuff's a little bit edgy. It's a little bit in your face. But the female stuff is going to be quite a bit, you know, a little bit more subtle, toned down quite a bit.
Right.
And it's for that, you know, that female pipe hitter in your life.
I like it. Explain how you came up with the word pipe hitter.
You know, it's a good story. Back in 2004, it was a whole group of us that were contracting and, you know, kind of for different people. But at the time, things were bad. Things were really bad. We were getting gunfights, you know, all the time. And we were losing buddies all the time. And these individuals that we were contracting for wanted to lower our pay. And we weren't having it. So we basically approached the situation risk-reward. You know, the risk is not going down and neither is the reward. You know, lucky for us at the time, you know, we were contractors. We weren't in the military anymore. So it was like, look, we'll just leave. You know, good luck, you
right.
know. And so they agreed not to, you know, lower our pay, but we started joking around, you know, if we, you know, that we needed a union, and if we had a union, what would we call it? Well, we'd call it the Pipe Hitters Union. You know, somebody that we kind of look out for the interests of the guys that are willing to make it happen, the guys that are, you know, kicking in doors, the guys that are, you know, willing to do anything to accomplish, you know, a goal.
Right. And that's what a pipe hitter is.
Yeah, that's what a pipe hitter is. I mean, and it's not just about, you know, warring. It's about, you know, anything. If you've got that mindset in life, if you're that guy that's willing to do whatever it takes to make it happen, you know, to accomplish that mission, whatever the case is, you know, you're a pipe hitter.
I love it. And, I love this.
Yeah, and that's where the story came from.
By the way, this samurai design is badass. It's badass. Your designers are good. I like this. And I should mention that the t-shirts are cheap. They're $28.
Yeah.
That's good. I like the prices. All right. Well. I know I'm going to be. This is going to be the gift to people when they're my guests, and we'll try to get a lot of people to wear these shirts. And my friend, thank you for doing the Brian Callen Show.
Thanks for having me.
Have you been to New York City, by the way?
Yes.
All right. Well, if you're out there, February 2021, 22, I'm going to be doing stand-up, but you've already seen my show. And he's still laughing, ladies and gentlemen. And then I'll be in San Francisco, all right? His sides still hurt. As muscular,
I mean, honestly,
as they are.
If everybody needs to see your show. Like, I really didn't know what to expect. You know, I don't really laugh a whole lot anyway. But, you know, you've done something right when you just can't control it. Like, I uncontrollably laughed, you know, throughout your entire show, especially when you opened up. And I couldn't really tell what was going on when you opened up. And I kind of figured that somebody had made a comment, and then you just took the ball and ran. And I knew that you were completely off script,
right.
But you were just going. And I was still just rolling, laughing uncontrollably.
Well, that was the guy who said, I can see. That was the guy who said, I can see your dick through your pants or something,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I just went with it. I mean, that's the wrong thing to say to me. I'm going to go crazy. So it was fun, man. By the way, Austin crowds, and Austin is a great town. So anybody, any of you fans in Austin, thanks for coming out, man. I had a blast. All right, DeMarco, thank you, sir. And
hey, thanks a lot.
I'll be talking to you soon, bro.
Absolutely. Have a good one.
All right, peace. That's it, ladies and gentlemen. That's the Brian Callen Show.
You've been listening to the Brian Callen Show. Be sure to visit briancallen.com for information about this episode as well as past and future episodes. You can follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Callen and like him on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Brian Callen Comedy. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.